Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight is a particular honor for me because, let's face it, my presence on this stage is pretty unlikely. My father was a foreign student, born and raised in a small village in Kenya. He grew up herding goats, went to school in a tin roof shack. His father, my grandfather, was a cook.
Welcome to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. We are the number one resource for small business and nonprofits. To learn how you can showcase your business or nonprofit, go to our website at TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com for details. Man, we have another great show in store for you today. So sound the alarm! Get on Facebook, Twitter, Foursquare, or Tumblr. Send out emails and text messages. Call your friends and family and tell them to tune in right now to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. And for those of you that are listening via Blog Talk Radio, leave your comment. Click the follow button or follow me on Twitter. And that's at TaylorMade101. I'll be reading your tweets live on the air. And I also have a chat room open. Out there in the chat room, you can leave your comments or ask questions. So whatever your pleasure, chat room, Twitter, Facebook, or just plain old my bell, we want to hear from you. But first, let's take a look at the current events. Greetings and salutations, everyone. Greetings and salutations. We have another great show in store for you today. So let's take a look at what's on tap. And we're going to talk a little bit about the State of the Union. Our very own co-host has an email from the White House, so we're going to read that, and we're going to talk about what's on tap for the president next week. We also want to look at Hillary Clinton's bid for the White House as well. As much more. So to join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. Now joining me in the studio is the executive producer of Current Events and the chief operating officer of Cook Enterprises. You can follow her on Twitter, and that's at AskJema. That's AskJema. I introduce the some and present the others, no other than Jema Hill Cook. Jema, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So I want to talk a little bit about the State of the Union, of course, and want to look at what do we think that is going to be on President Obama's agenda coming up. But first, I want to read for the listening audience out there the email that you received from the Obama administration outlining the State of the Union. Here's what it says. Every year, it's the same. In the days leading up to the State of the Union, the phone rings off the hook with everyone trying to figure out what will be on the president's address. We're now just 4 days out, and the president wanted you to get the first preview of what this speech is all about. That's right. And the president wanted Jema Hill Cook to get the first preview of what this speech is all about. As always, he'll be working on it right up until game time, it says. But three words sum up the president's message on Tuesday night: opportunity, action, and optimism. The core idea is an American as they come. If you work hard and play by the rules, you should have the opportunity to succeed. Your ability to get ahead should be based on your hard work and ambition, and who you want to be, not just the raw circumstance of who you are when you were born. On Tuesday night, the president will lay out a set of real, concrete, practical proposals to grow the economy, strengthen the middle class, and empower all who hope to join in. So my question to you is, in the context of opportunity, action, and optimism, what will the president unfold?
Excuse me. Well, I think he'll revisit some themes from probably his first State of the Union, or even the first time he addressed the joint Congresses together, both houses together. We are in a better place than we were 5 years ago. We are in a better place than we were this time last year. It might not feel like it with everything going on, with the unemployment not being extended, with jobs still being cut, and you're hearing different companies laying off every day. So it's not as though we've come out of the woods, but you can definitely start to see some light up ahead. And so you have to make the decision, and I think that's the optimism that comes in, whether you're going to, you know, forge ahead toward the light or just stay where you are. And I think the president is such a visionary that he knows it's not going to be easy and that it hasn't been easy. It has been painful. But I think if he begins to use the opportunities that are afforded to him as being president of the United States of America, by that I mean the different things he can do constitutionally as executive order, I think we're going to see him doing more of that. I really don't think he's going to waste a whole lot of time on Congress, especially on the House, to do anything substantial, because they haven't done it thus far. So what would be his motivation to think that all of a sudden now they're going to want to do something different, especially with this being an election year for midterm? So I think we'll see the president operate a little bit outside of what we're used to seeing him operate in. I think he'll be a little bit more bold, I'm hoping anyway, he'll be a little bit more bold in his actions, and that he'll use the Constitution as leverage. You know, he has the ability to, at the stroke of a pen, make things happen. And if he can do that, that in the long run would be for the betterment of society as a whole in terms of finding ways to create jobs and keep, you know, people employed. I think he should do it. And so I'm hopeful about that. So for me, you know, I think that's the optimism part of it, is him taking charge. Like you said, he's not running for anything else again. So what they going to do to him, you know?
I'm glad you mentioned that, because what do you say to President Obama's detractors when they say he's a lame duck president? Now, just for the listening audiences out there, I want to kind of define what I mean by this term lame duck, because it's put out there in a lot of different ways, right? So lame duck in the context of my question is really about a person or an elected official who is approaching the end of their term. In particular, the fact that there's no repercussions that are consequences faced by their actions. He's not going to be in another election. He's not going to be concerned about his popularity if he makes a decision or make an appointment or pass a law, use the stroke of the pen. So could he be a lame duck president in the sense that he don't want to get anything done, or could he be the lame duck president in the essence of doing things without worrying about the consequences?
I think it's too soon to term him as a lame duck president, because I think this is the year, 2014 is the year that he has the opportunity, to get some things done. I really do. And I think he'll do them by executive order. I really don't think he's going to wait on Congress. Now, if he waits until to see if the Democrats can retake the House, after midterms this year. That's a gamble. So, because it may not happen, and then you're dealing with the same people that was there before, the same type of people, and you're not going to, at that point, from the end of this year going into the full-fledged primary season of the presidency for the next term is when I say he would be, you know, lame duck. I think right now there's still some things he can move on. He can move on gun control. He can move on a budget. He can move on some job growth.
Come on now. I mean, he can't move on gun control. Let's be realistic. I mean, there's nothing he can do.
He can. There's a part of
it.
He can
do on gun control. There's nothing he can do on jobs. There's nothing he can do on any of those things you just listed, because if there were, he would have done them already. So, you know, I can't really buy into the notion that he is going to do all these things when he had 5 years to do them so far and hasn't gotten them done, especially on gun control, especially on immigration reform, especially on dealing with the poor.
Right, and that's fine for you not to see it, but I'm going to emphatically disagree in terms of what has not been accomplished yet or completed. It's not that he hasn't attempted to do these sorts of things, but, you know, we have to admit, the people in which he's been trying to work with for at least the last 2 years, and not even 2 years, because one of them years he was running for reelection. And so playing politics, there's only so many things you're going to try to get done while you're still in office, because you're trying to get reelected. Well, he's not going to try to get reelected for anything after this. So this is the time to do it. Right now, 2014, is his year. And if he can, whatever power he has with the executive order, my expectation is that he takes it. I mean, what else? I mean, what can they do? Nothing. So you might as well. I mean, they already don't like him. They already disrespect him. They already say he's, you know, the worst president ever, and they got all these names for him and all this other stuff. I mean, what does he have to lose at this point? Absolutely
nothing.
If
you look at
it
long term,
absolutely nothing to lose. So by
yes, he does. He could put the Democrats in a position where another Democrat would have a more difficult time being reelected if he chooses to take advantage of his position by doing those things you just talked about. Now, that doesn't mean that he shouldn't, you know, if Congress is not moving or not acting, he shouldn't take some strides. But, you know, we talk about repercussions. Yeah, the repercussions will not be on the president himself, but it could damage the future of the Democratic Party, because the Republicans, as you know, control the narrative. In most cases, people always talk about what Rush Limbaugh has said, what Hannity has said, what somebody on Fox News has said. And we have our conversations about what they talk about, right? So because they control the narrative, then if President Obama does something like that, he could potentially damage the Democratic Party for a long time.
I disagree with that as well. I think let's be real clear here. You know, it's not as if he's had the full support of the Democratic Party anyway. So it's not as though, you know, he's hung his hat on their support, because they've been fickle, to put it mildly, in terms of their support for the president. The second thing is, the last Democrat that decided to run for president and run away from the sitting president lost badly, didn't even carry his own state. And that's how we ended up with George Bush. So hopefully, you know, we are people that are have selective recall as it relates to history. So hopefully we'll remember this as how it really happened and not how we thought it happened. That's number two. The third part of that is that, as I stated, there are things he has tried to accomplish up until this point that has been met with opposition, and it has not all been Republican opposition. So for him to go ahead on and strike the deal with himself and let the chips fall where they may, they're going to fall where they may anyway. Democrats have to get a spine, and they have to get a backbone, and they have to learn how to fight the same way they are being attacked. If we at a football game, I'm not coming in hockey gear. I ain't playing hockey. although you told me we was playing hockey, I show up in hockey gear and you got on football gear. Who gonna win if everybody else is, if all the referees are football referees? They don't know hockey. So I got to learn how to adjust. So when it comes time to fighting Republicans, fighting conservatives, the Tea Party, whatever term they're going by this year, because I don't know, whichever one it is, then Democrats, liberals, progressives have got to fight the same kind of fight and stop always trying to take the high road and be above everything. Sometimes you got to get in the gutter with some people. And when you meet them where they are, then they want to back up and say you're challenging them or you've been you bullying them. They come with all these other terms. When you fight them the same way they fight you, then something wrong with you. And every time the president does that, every time the president meets them where they are and beats them at their own game, then they want to turn around and it's on the president. Well,
but that's not the president's character, though. That's not the president's character to really do that. That should be somebody else's role, right?
I agree, it should be. But every now and then he has to go out there and fight the fight because nobody else is doing it. I've said this from the beginning. For every time there's a Republican on TV lying, because that's what they do most of the time. Not all the time, but a lot of the time, whenever there's a Republican on TV telling an untruth, there should be a Democrat or a progressive or whoever telling the opposite of what they're saying. That's how you get back control of the narrative. If your narrative is only in response to, then you've already lost the fight. At some point, you have to drive the narrative. And it's just like now. I know we're going to get into this later. It's just like now, the little winter meeting that the Republicans had and how they're moving up their primary and they're doing all these things. Well, I sincerely hope the Democrats don't fall prey to that nonsense. Let them do whatever they're going to do because they got a lot of work to do anyway. They in turmoil right now. But let them have that. And the different things that they're talking about, if it is not about jobs, if it's not about making sure, if it's not about the Affordable Care Act, and if it's not about education, I really don't think we need to be talking about it.
But they're scared of the Democrats are scared of the Affordable Care Act. You know, a lot of them not supporting it, a lot of them not getting out on the beating the pavement, you know, in their districts talking about it. So, I mean, the president really has done a lot, I must say, in the first couple of years, a few years he's been in office, and he's really done it with not with a lot of Democratic support, which is to me. And I say that because whenever a Republican comes out with an issue, now, as of late, they've kind of been divided. But, you know, early on, the Republicans used to be united. You know, they used to stand with a united front. And the Democrats right now are kind of split. And especially when it comes to the president, I don't understand them. What is going on with these guys?
Well, like I said, it goes back to the fact that we cannot make the assumption that only people in the Republican Party did not want him to be president, because that's not true. There was a lot of anger and hatred on the Democratic side when this president won the nomination. And it took them a cycle. It took them the first couple years of his presidency to get over it. And now that they've gotten over it, kind of, and he's, you know, won a second term, it's almost like, okay, we got to go ahead and, you know, give, because he didn't win again. So, you know, what's our motive, you know? We can say it was a fluke the first time, but it can't be a fluke the second time. You know, something about this guy has to be right. And so you have these blue dog Democrats, which I think is just a crazy term because they're really Republicans, but they can win because they want to say they're Democrats because of the part of the state that they're residing in that gives them coverage. And so they have that category of Democrats have never been in full support of the president or his agenda. And then the Democrats through this whole process in those first couple of years was really trying to figure out, you know, who this man was, because he didn't come through the ranks. He didn't get a blessing. He didn't come, you know, through all the channels that most people have to go through. And so there was a lot of jealousy on that. There was a lot of envy on that. And that was from both sides. You know, both sides was like, well, who does this dude think he is? He just come in here and be a senator for a couple of years and then run for president. And then have the audacity to win. You know, so
twice.
Twice, you know, and beat them at their own game. I mean, he beat them at the game that they had mastered. And so
then you
got to
say he beat the money, too. He beat the money, too.
That's
he beat the
I'm
money and
about.
The power.
That's,
he beat the money and the power.
That's
absolutely.
The game I'm talking about.
He
yeah,
beat the machine.
That's the game I'm talking
absolutely.
About.
Beat the machine.
The money
yeah.
game. Yeah, he beat them at the game they had mastered and the game they had kept secret. And once that game came out the gate, it's just, you know, all hands on deck. And that's what he did. So I think the Democrats, I agree with you. I think they've been piss poor when it comes to the Affordable Care Act. I mean, piss poor. There's no reason that we're still having conversations about the benefits of it. We should not still be having these conversations. People should know by now. And it shouldn't have been up to the president or the White House or Jay Carney, the press conferences, to make that known. It should have been left up to elected officials whose job it is to go out. Outside of Nancy Pelosi and maybe Jim Clyburn, the top two Democrats right now, it's bare minimum. Congressional Black Caucus hasn't really been that great. Hispanic Caucus hasn't been that great. The Progressive Caucus, you know, they kind of iffy. It depends on if they like what he's talking about. So, you know, he's really been tooting the horn about the health care by himself. And, you know, when you in a room full of wolves, you need some help.
Yeah. So, the State of the Union. What do you think what would be the takeaway message? Not the detractors, not the the cynical people, but what would be the main takeaway message you think coming out of the speech next week?
I guarantee you, if the president says anything about not waiting on Congress, going to the American people, they are going to jump on it and say he's dividing the country. And he is in violation of the Constitution because nothing can happen without Congress. I guarantee you. If he talks about, if he hints any kind of way of taking action on his own and following through on it and listening to the will of the people, I guarantee you what they're going to hear is a dictator. You'll hear that term come back up again, although it hasn't really left, but you'll hear that come back up. You'll hear impeachment come back up because they will swear that he is in violation of the Constitution, although you're dealing with a man that was a constitutional lawyer, teacher. I don't know how he don't know the Constitution, but that just baffles me.
So yeah, but what would be the main takeaway message, though, that he will lead, the president will lead with, that he will lead the American people with?
Well, I mean, just what they already said. He's gonna provide some – I think he's going to give us – hopefully a roadmap to how we get to the other side, how we deal with unemployment, how we deal with ensuring, you know, going full speed ahead and keeping things going with health care. I think he'll talk about those numbers. I think people will walk away with a new understanding of health care and who gets it and how it's paid for. I think that should be in there. I know he's doing some different things with education. He's doing some different things with the criminal justice system. I mean, he's already laid a few seeds down. He's planted a few seeds on some things that I think is going to have a lot to do with his legacy as president. Things that will have systemic change value. When you're talking about dealing with the sentencing laws and mass incarceration and education, when you start talking about those things, whether or not he ever says the word poor is irrelevant, because you can say poor 12,000 times, but if nothing you're doing is going to impact the poor or affect the poor or affect the poor, then I don't need to just say the word poor. I need you to do something to help the poor. So I'm not looking for him to say poor 12 times or 20 times. I'm looking to see whether or not what he's talking about doing will have a positive impact on the poor.
Okay. I mean, I think I'm inclined to agree with you. I just think, and what people will walk away with next week is the fact that the Affordable Care Act is working. I believe he's going to go in hard. I believe he's going to give us some numbers that we've never seen before, at least since the October challenges that they had. And I believe he's going to talk about the agenda to raise the minimum wage. I think those two things that he's going to be able to drive home, that's going to have the most impact because they affect the most people. And we, as we talked about earlier, we talked about the fact that he beat the machine. And I define the machine as being most of the Republican Party with the money, most of the people with all the power. You know, when the Mitt Romneys and the Clintons, he beat them too as well. I mean, anybody that had a lot of money and a lot of power in politics, President Obama had positioned himself really, really well, and he won. And so, and he was only able to do that not because of the power and the money he had, because he chose the people over the politics. He chose the people over the power, and he chose the people over the money. So when you look at that, the two things I think people are going to leave with is, yes, the Affordable Care Act is working, and yes, that I'm going to do something about minimum wage at all costs. And, you know, we talked about the lame duck presidency and things of that nature, and you said, and you articulated really well about he's really not in that stage yet. And so he still does have some gumption. He still does have some power, and he still does have a lot of a political capital in order to get those things done. So much that you're starting to see states take it upon themselves to make change with respect to the minimum wage, because the president learned, you know, a couple of cycles ago that Congress is trying to do everything they can to stop him. They're blocking him in this, and they won't take things debate on. They won't take things to the floor. They won't vote on things. So he's building an alliance, I think, at the states in getting them to start to move forward, and I think that is going to be a mechanism he's going to try to use to his advantage as well.
Yeah, I agree, and I think he has. They already mentioned that he'll be going out to different parts of the country here over the next couple of weeks, and he's at his best when he's out amongst the people. And I think that is what some will fear the most, is when he gets out there, and the people start pushing on their own state elected officials as well as the national officials, because this is an election year for a lot of them, and they start having these town meetings back in certain states and certain areas. I hope the American people are showing up and pushing back and asking their elected officials the tough questions as it relates to some of the things the president is going out talking about, whether it's immigration, whether it's minimum wage, whether it's something around gun control. Something has to happen. And I think this is the time. If he had a time to do it, I think this is the time to do it, primarily because anything after this year is just everything is going to be focused on who the next president is going to be.
Yeah.
I mean, they're already killing me softly. We're talking about it right now. I'm trying to give him the benefit of the doubt, but I would really like for him to be able to have an election year. Because if you think about it, there hasn't been a sitting president in my current memory, and maybe I'm hypersensitive or just overly alert, who was elected president, and the whole time he's been president, it's been about who the next president going to be. Just think about that. His whole time that he has been president, there has been conversation on who the next president is going to be. That just bothers me. It bothers me to the core that even now, second term, it's worse now than the first term. But the whole time he's been president, since he was inaugurated in January of 2009, it has been about who's the next president going to be. And that's just disgusting to me.
I have to agree with you. All right, it's time for us to take a break. But when we return, we're going to talk a little bit about the Republican response to the State of the Union. We're going to talk about United States Representative Kathy McMorris Rogers. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Be back in a moment.
You are listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. coming to you live from Dallas, Texas. My mom and dad will be right back after these messages.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our company's tailor-made training and consulting, current events, and Ask Jima can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jima. And Ask Jima says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy. And I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend. And of course, my East Coast.
Need a new website? Haven't figured out your social media strategy? Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're a full service, interactive consulting firm specializing in social media marketing, web design, technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training. So go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. Google me.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Again, that's 323-580-5712. All right, let's talk a little bit about Kathy McMorris Rogers. Now, as you know, or do not know, she's going to deliver the Republican address to the nation following the State of the Union speech by President Barack Obama. Now, who is she? That's the first question. And then what does she stand for is some of the questions I ask. I ask that because we've had in the past Virginia Governor Bob McDonnell deliver the State of the Union response to the State of the Union in 2010. And now he's up for a federal indictment. Then you had Representative Paul Ryan, who lost the last election with Mitt Romney. Then, of course, you had Mitch Daniels. He just dropped off the face of the earth when it comes to politics. And who can forget Marco Rubio and all of the water and cottonmouth things he had? So one has to wonder, what is she setting herself up for to deliver the address or the response to President Obama's State of the Union? It has not fared well for the Republican Party once they've done it. So I went out to her page, and just to kind of get a little background, I'm going to share some of that with you. Now in her fifth term representing Washington 5th District, McMorris Rogers hails from a farming family with deep roots in eastern Washington. Here she grew up working with her parents and brother at their orchard and fruit stand in Kettles Falls. She was the first in her family to graduate from college and later earn an executive MBA from the University of Washington. After rising to become minority leader in Washington State House, she was elected to Congress, where she serves on the House Energy and Commerce Committee and has been a member of the Republican leadership since 2009. As conference chair, McMorris-Rodgers is the fourth highest-ranking Republican in the House of Representatives. She co-founded the Bipartisan Congressional Down Syndrome Caucus and the Congressional Military Family Caucus. She is married to Brian Rodgers, a retired Navy commander, and have three children, Cole, 6, Grace, 3, and Brian, 2 months. So she just had a baby. And I think she's the first, has been touted the first congresswoman, three children while in holding an office. So that's pretty much who she is. So the question becomes then, what's her voting record like? What is she all about? Right? She's a wonderful person, obviously. But when you look at her record, one has to wonder, right? Because on her record, she votes for cuts to Medicaid and Medicare. She voted against the health care reform, of course. She voted against cost-saving measures in the health insurance industry. She voted for cuts to Social Security. That's right, cutting Social Security. She voted against food for children and disabled, which is odd because she started this organization for Down syndrome kids. She voted against protecting women for violence and unequal pay. She voted against access to contraceptives. So when you look at her background and you look at, obviously she kind of, pulled herself up by her bootstraps and I'm pretty sure got some government assistance because her family was farmers. They've always been subsidizing farms. You know, so it's interesting to see her voting record on all of these issues. Jima, so what's the deal here?
Well, I think this is, not to diminish her accomplishments as an elected official. However, I think this is an attempt by the Republicans to show a quote-unquote softer side and have us believe that because of who's delivering the message, that the message is going to be different and that the message is going to make sense and that the message is going to make us all feel better about the situation. It doesn't matter to me who tells me what I can't do. If you're black, white, green, purple, a female, or whatever, it doesn't matter to me. Being a black female, you putting a black female in front of me to tell me I shouldn't have access to tell me that you didn't vote, for violence against women, that you don't value my life as a woman, that you don't value my opinion to make decisions. Just because those things come from a woman, I'm not going to like them anymore. So I think the fact that they've had some issues over the last couple of weeks with statements from men in the Republican Party and the Tea Party making statements about women, once again, one candidate, said that we should just married women should just be submissive to their husbands and that there's no such thing as spousal rape. And so they've had these things come out in the last couple of weeks. So I think them putting her forward is trying to play some sort of Jedi mind trick that they're going to give us a different message because a woman is telling us, but it's going to be the same message, which we should expect it to be the same message because of her voting record. She is a far right, and this is according to the people in her own district. She's a far right Republican. So she does not compromise. She doesn't see any value in it. And if it's not a quid pro quo, then she's not voting for it. So that's not going to change. Her telling me that, her getting up, delivering the response to the President's State of the Union is not going to change my perception of the Republican Party.
I mean, it's almost like delivering a steak sandwich on the top of a trash can lid, right?
Yes, sir. It's still on. I mean, it might be my favorite meal. It might be everything I wanted for that day. But if your presentation to me is on the top of a trash can, I'm not going to want it. Because of how you delivered it. I'm not going to want it. Although it's my meal, I'm not going to want it because of how you're presenting it to me. That is correct.
You know, so what's interesting to me is that, you know, a lot of people take position because of something in their past or becomes they have a strong affinity to, right? I mean, the president did not give on health care because he had a personal experience, what we call a significant emotional event associated with his family, his mom, right, which he obviously loved deeply. And so for him to stick, you know, to go all in on healthcare is understandable to me. And so when I look at somebody just to pose to him, like a Kathy McMorris Rogers, and the fact that the record states that she has a child that has Down syndrome. And then when I look at an issue like voted against food for children and the disabled, that makes me wonder. You know, there's an article on the web at wecandobetter.org that states Representative Kathy McMorris voted for a $2.71 billion in cuts to SNAP, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, over the next decade to feed the hungry and support farmers. This is also part of the Paul Ryan budget. Almost two-thirds of SNAP recipients are children, elderly, and or disabled. And so when you look at the fact that she grew up on a farm, look at the fact she has a child with Down syndrome, she has three kids, how could she not, you know, be for something like this, Jima? What is going on there?
Well, I don't know. I really can't even give you a made up reason as to why, because it doesn't seem to make sense. There's a lot of people, even in elected positions, but there are a lot of people that lately have been voting against their own best interests. And, you know, I'm not sure what her financial situation was prior to her getting married a couple of years ago, but you know, anybody that has a child and then have a child that has a disability, you know, at some point you're going to need some help. And so for her to kind of scoff at that because she's in the have class and not the have not class, it's bothersome. It really is bothersome. And there's a lot of things that may not have a direct impact on me personally, but every time I go to the voting booth, I'm not voting just for me. I'm voting for, you know, what's in the best interest of my community, my neighborhood, you know, my country. And so although I may not totally agree with something or not even necessarily agree with it, I might not even see the benefits. I don't know if I'll ever see the real benefits of the Affordable Care Act, but I know that I know other people will. I know other people already have. And so, because I'm one of the ones in the class that already have insurance due to you, my husband covers through his job. So, you know, but what about all the people that don't have it? What about people who work every day two jobs just to make ends meet and neither one of the jobs provide health care? Just because I'm not directly affected by something doesn't mean I can't see the benefit of it. And I think that's where we've gotten off. And I'm not real sure how she could vote against some things that in the big picture makes sense because of how it's going to impact children, the elderly, the disabled, women, and just people's overall, you know, how well they'll do. So I don't know. I don't understand. I've never understood it, and her standing up there telling me is not going to make me understand it even more.
I have to agree with you. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. So before we shift to another issue here, I do have one more question to ask you regarding this. And the fact that, you know, I mentioned you had Bob McDonald, Paul Ryan, Mitch Daniels, Marco Rubio, and now Kathy McMorris Rogers. So what could potentially come out about her throughout this process? Once you get into the mainstream media and you want to play on the big stage, you know, people start peeling the layer back a little bit. What do you guys think she got any skeletons in the closet?
Oh, I'm sure she does. I'm sure she does. And if nothing else, her voting record is a skeleton enough for me. I mean, I don't really care what her childhood was like. I don't care if she ever had an abortion and ain't told nobody. I really don't care. Her voting record speaks volumes to me. And you're right, though. People will now start to dig and will start to do a little bit more research on who she is, what she stands for, and or what she doesn't stand for, or how she, you know, how she votes, and you know, how she might be at the highest ranking Republican there, but what has she done with that? Female, you know, what has she done with that? And so I think, you know, the difference between Republican women and Democratic women, it go back from last week's episode of Bill Maher, and you saw the exchange between, I think it's Matlin, Mary Matlin, and Governor Jennifer, that used to be the governor of Michigan. When you go back and you see those two women, one Democrat, one Republican, talking about women's issues, it was astounding to me. I was like, how did women's issues become partisan? If I'm a woman, whether I'm a Democrat or Republican, you've been able to charge me double for health care. It's wrong. I don't care if I'm a Democrat or a Republican on that issue. My gender should not be a pre-existing condition. And so to hear, you know, so how can she, I really don't care what her past is. I'm looking at her voting record, and her voting record speaks volumes to the type of person that she is. So, and even like I stated, the article I read as well from her own constituents in her district back in Washington state how, you know, she is not speaking for them. And then my question is, why y'all keep electing her? So, you know, people have to own up to what they do or don't do as well. So if she's not, if the person representing you isn't speaking for you, then you need to make sure that somebody gets there that is. So I'm pretty sure there will be some expose on her by the time this week is out. Right, either leading up to her response on Tuesday night, or when, by the time we all wake up Wednesday morning, somebody will have had something to say. Some past lover, she may have had some sort of homosexual relationship in the past. I don't know. But I guarantee you, something is going to come out. I guarantee you. And we're going to be like, what?
That's what the big stage will do to you.
Yep. It does.
So speaking of the big stage, speaking of women in politics, speaking of the past, I want to talk a little bit about Hillary Rodham Clinton. The fact that she has been in the buzz for several weeks now. And I want to talk about her in the context of the past, her past. Not necessarily her past, but her husband's past. And I say that because today on Meet the Press, viewers of NBC's Meet the Press were treated to a blast from the past by Senator Rand Paul, the Republican from Kentucky, because he weighed in on former President Bill Clinton's behavior with Monica Lewinsky, of course. Now, in an article in the Huffington Post, it says, host David Gregory asked Paul about an interview with him and his wife that appeared in the September issue of Vogue. In it, Kelly Paul said that voters should consider Clinton's predatory behavior in the White House before returning him there as first spouse. Clinton was impeached in 1998 after lying about his sexual relations with Lewinsky and had to fight to remain in office. So, Gene, my question to you is, if Hillary Rodham Clinton, you know, goes for the White House, will President Bill Clinton be an issue?
Yes and no. My thing is, this is one of these things that bother me talking about Hillary, that they've talked about Hillary the entire time the president has been president, as if she's some heir apparent to the throne. They had done that once before, and it didn't quite work out for her. I think it's disrespectful to just count out the vice president as if he's not going to run. I just think that's, I don't like that, but that's personal. Bill Clinton will be a problem But I think the bigger problem is going to be, you know, Hillary's own record and whether or not there's holes in it that the whoever the Republicans get will be able to put any holes in her record around a host of things. We're talking about something that happened in the 90s, and we're in the mid-2000-ish. It'll be 2015, 2016. You have a whole host of people that might be their first time voting, and they're not going to know about Monica Lewinsky, and they're probably not going to care. And so to try to bring that up as some sort of ghost, the ghost of Bill Clinton, I think is really reaching, and it's really showing the desperation of the Republican Party, of Rand Paul specifically, because it just doesn't make sense. It has no bearing on Hillary in terms of whether or not she's qualified, which we know that she is, to be president of the United States. It doesn't have any bearing on it. So I think it was a stretch, and I know they're going to continue to just throw that out there. He may be her Achilles heel, I mean, because Bill has said some things in the past. You know, Hillary doesn't have a clean cakewalk. You know, she doesn't have to go back and eat some crow and really, you know, bow down to some people and ask for some forgiveness because of her husband, and he's going to have to go out and do the same thing. So, I don't think the path is as the golden road in Wiz as we think it is. I think along the way, you know, that they're going to run into some problems, and I just hope that at the end that we get a person that's going to be truly representative of the people, and if that's Hillary, that's fine. If that's Vice President Biden, that's fine, or whoever it is. I hope that whatever she's going to deal with Bill, she's going to have to deal with Bill. That's just going to happen. And they'll poke holes enough in her own history to be able to hold her feet to the fire, because we obviously Benghazi is not going away, although we don't really know why it's still here. But and you bring up anything, and Benghazi is like number three thing they talk about. So I'm sure they'll be talking about Benghazi until the first debate. So, you know, here we sit. So, yeah, okay. I don't think Bill would be that big of a deal. It'd be a light distraction because he's really made amends for himself. It would be different if after that incident there had been another one, but there hasn't been. And so he's done some things on a national level and an international level, actually, globally, that I think will kind of overshadow that. Because Republicans really can't talk about somebody cheating. I mean, they really can't hold that moral card. They really can't.
Right. Okay, so let's shift now to an issue that's been all over social media, and that's this Russian socialite. And this picture that is this illustration, I should say, that is depicted of a Russian model sitting on top of a African American woman, and so it's basically she's perched on top of a dummy, not a real human, who is she's nude. With the exception of her undergarments, she has on a garter belt, and her elbows have on gloves, and she's laying down. So this picture has been all over social media because she's really sitting on top of this woman, of this black dummy. So, Jimmy, what do you make of this? Is this art, or is this something else happening here?
I think it was art before she sat down. And I think once she sat down, she made it something else. Because before she sits down, one's not real sure what it is, because a lot of times with art, you're like, what is that contraption? You really don't know what it is. I think then her sitting down gives it a whole nother perspective in terms of what it means. Now when you look at it, it has a totally different meaning. So, you know, for her and the people to say, oh, that wasn't what we were trying to do, we were just thinking this, yada, yada, You know, it's almost like, who do y'all run this stuff by before you do it? I mean, there's nobody sitting around you that said that's probably not going to be a good look, you know. And then, you know, that it came out on the observance of Martin Luther King just kind of was like, really? Y'all couldn't pick another day to bring this out, and number one. And number two, whatever made you think this is going to be okay. And so I just think, you know, by itself, I mean, it was risque anyway, just in itself, you know. And then all the implications of, you know, naked woman who, you know, we're all, black women are always seen as overly sexualized. So you got this naked woman with her feet in a certain position and, her, you know, almost her breast hanging out. And just, you know, all of that negative energy that comes behind that. So it wasn't, you know, tasteful art done in the beginning, in my opinion. And then to add it to be a seat that now you're sitting on me, just black woman, you just white woman perched up on top of me. You know, I'm nothing more than a place for you to sit. You know, that's what it comes out of after you, you know, when you take a look at it. So it was just ill timed. They could have just waited or not done it at all, or just did the chair separate and not shown her sitting on top of it. Her sitting on top of it just gave it a whole nother dimension.
That's fair.
Complete.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Well, that may be fair, but do you think the depiction between Justin Bieber and what's his name? Richard Sherman. Yeah, mm-hmm. Richard Sherman and Justin Bieber. The depiction of Justin Bieber being misguided and the depiction of Richard Sherman being a thug. Now, what about that illustration?
Well, we need to define thug, because I wouldn't categorize either one of them as a thug, number one. Number two, to say one is and one is misguided, I think it's out of order, because Justin Bieber is a lot of things and misguided is not one of them. He's making some very conscious decisions to do the things that he's doing for whatever reason. Some may say he's crying out. Some might say he's just having fun. He's 19. You know, whatever you want to give it. But he's making conscious decisions to be around the people he's around, to behave the way he's behaving. All of that is conscious. So when you make those sort of decisions, then you deal with the consequences. Richard Sherman, I think, you know, the league, in my opinion, have to give these players a moment to gather themselves. Because, you know, 5 minutes after that interview, when he was interviewed again, he was a totally different person. He was not, you know, as hyped. I mean, he had just played of the game to win the game. And so, of course, he's hyped. Of course, he's going to say whatever. And I really think, you know, honestly, it was the facial expressions of the reporter that sent everybody in the tizzy, like he was going to do something to her or something. I don't know. But here you have this. You know, and he's not that big of a black man, but you got this black man that appears to be angry, talking to this white little nice reporter woman, and so, you know, it's magnified 10,000 times. And so it's been a non-story. It was a non-story when it happened. In my opinion, it's been a non-story all week, and you know, it just seems as though we cannot express ourselves without having to think about how we're expressing ourselves, you know. Different people can get on TV and say all sorts of things, or be in interviews and say all sorts of things, but the black man has to self-check himself at
every level. Choose words nicely, yeah.
Right, and you know, that gets tiring. I mean, it gets tiring for me as a female to have to do it. So especially when I'm in a certain room, I have to act, you know, I have to present myself a certain way. I can never come off as the angry black woman. I would sit in meetings and I would preface my comment by saying, I'm not mad, but I'm highly passionate about what I'm about to say. So that, you know, your response to me is not that you're dealing with my feelings, because I'm not mad about anything. But I do have strong feelings about what we're about to discuss. And so, but I no one else in the room had to do that. I'm the only one that had to do that. Because if I didn't do it, then I got a call later from my white male boss to tell me people were intimidated by what I had to say, and I seemed like I was angry about something, and I was mad at everybody in the room. I'm like, wow, So the fact that we have to gauge all of that before we speak is tiresome. On any given day, it's tiresome. And so, you know, I just think Justin Bieber is who he is. Yeah, he's 19. I remember being 19. You know, I wasn't driving Lamborghinis and whatnot, but I remember being 19. But Phil got to own up to it. He got a problem with something. I don't know. It might not be drugs. It might not be alcohol. It might not be prescription medication. But he got a problem with something. And the sooner he figured it out, the better. Right. And the sooner he figured it out, everybody will be all right.
All righty. That's our show for today. What's your final thoughts?
My final thoughts is I really hope everybody watches the State of the Union and hear it for yourself and not just rely on the pundits to give you their responses or what they heard. Hear it for yourself and make your own decision about where and what can you do to help move the agenda forward. And then the other thing is that, you know, we're leading, going into already when we meet next Sunday, we'll be in the second month of this year. And so whatever resolutions you had or whatever goals you set down for yourself, you know, go back and reflect and check on them and see where you are, see if you've made any progress. Or if you're just stuck on first or you ain't even hit the ball yet, you're just swinging a bat. So, you know, find out where you are and then figure out what it is you need to do to help push yourself forward. And just be aware, it's Super Bowl Sunday next Sunday. So I can't pick right now because I like both of these teams. So I probably won't be able to make my pick till like midweek. I don't know. I'm torn. I really don't know. I mean, I'm kind of leaning towards Peyton Manning, not necessarily toward Denver, but I'm kind of leaning towards Peyton Manning and leaning away from Pete Carroll because I still don't like Pete Carroll from how he got away with stuff that he did at USC. So, you know, I probably just let that go, but I haven't just yet. But that's kind of where I'm at with that.
All righty then. So,
and watch the Grammys tonight. Watch the Grammys
right.
tonight. I heard it's going to be something hot right at the beginning of the show. So you do not miss the beginning of the show tonight, the beginning of the Grammys.
All right. Well, that's our show for today. I would like to thank all the listeners for tuning in, and a special thanks to my co-host, the wonderful, the magnificent, Jima Hill Cook. Now, you can follow her on Twitter, and that's at AskJima. That's AskJema. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. We are the number one resource for small business and nonprofits. Now, don't forget to bookmark this site and visit my blog. And that's at tailormadetalkradio.blogspot.com. That's TAILORMADE talkradio.blogspot.com. Until next time, remember it is written, my people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge. So stay engaged, stay informed, and stay plugged in to Current Events with Patrick Cook. You're listening to the sounds of Joyce Spencer. Sweet Dreams. Take us away, Joyce.